Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers, and tonight's conversation is with John Mitchell, acting director of the U.S. Mint, and Colleen Vogel, staff director of Mint Operations. Well, in the second segment, why don't we spend some time talking about your experiences at the Mint? What was it like when you arrived, and what were some of the changes you made?
When we arrived at the Mint, and this roughly goes back 6 or 7 years for myself and the former director, and for Colleen goes back a few years prior to that, what we found was a very traditional stovepipe oriented organization, and one that did its job well in the old way of doing business, but really hadn't been as responsive to the market and realized opportunities that were there. So, for example, from its perspective, the Mint was customer focused in that it provided the products to its customers within roughly 8 weeks or beyond that for half of its products, and the other half of its products there was no tracking for because it could take up to 6 months. And now we've completely turned that around in terms of providing standard delivery in 3 weeks, 4 weeks, and in many cases within a week and next day delivery as well. So in terms of the circulating coin field and the numismatic or collectible side of our business, the Mint had succeeded in running things the way it had for decades, but really had not taken advantage of the opportunities that the market presented, number one, and number two, had a customer focus that internally it determined what the customer wanted versus talking to the customers to determine what products and services they would want.
Yeah, I agree. When I first came 10 years ago, the Mint was the government that also happened to be in business. And I think we've shifted to a business that also happens to be the government. And, specifically to procurement, a small portion of our procurements when I first came to the Mint were exempt, but otherwise we were regulated. And then when we received the procurement waiver in 1995, we began the process of shifting all of our practices to a more streamlined.
What do you think started all this change?
Well, I think that going back 5 to 6 years, we, believe it or not, the Mint never had a strategic plan. We're only 208 years old, so I guess it's understandable it took us a little late to get out of the chute. But we'd never had a strategic plan, and we crafted our very first one, which, all things considered, was a very modest document, but it is what that document represented to the Mint. Number one, we designed that document in partnership with our union. We had union leadership sitting around the table with management from the Mint, and we created a strategic plan from scratch. And we really focused on our vision, our mission, and our guiding principles as to what values we as an institution held. And then we set on a course of accomplishing 12 or 14 projects. If you look at that plan now, it's not in a good format. It has no measurements. It very much is not aligned in terms of goals, objectives, strategies, performance measures, measurements, et cetera. But it was a great beginning. And two other things to note about it. One is that it projected out a vision as to what we could become and the things we needed to do to get there, including legislation. It also established part of our culture stretch goals, that it's okay to set the bar high. And if you fall short of that, then you still have made much more progress than you otherwise would have made with more modest goals. So I think that document and how it was designed in partnership, which was a very significant turn for the Mint.
Was it difficult to create, getting people together, establishing the vision? I mean, I think one of the stories we hear that people don't have strategic plans because it's just too hard.
Yes, it was. It was also an exciting time. I remember one of our union stewards at the time, a gentleman named Dale Nuanis from Denver, our Denver Mint, talked as we sat around the table, and the first initial years of our strategic plan creation and then modification, there were only maybe 30 or 40 of us off-site for 3 days putting together this plan. And from a relationship perspective, one of the things that Dale mentioned was, as a union individual, that it was rewarding to him to look across the table and not see three- and four-headed management dragons staring back at him, that we're all people, that we all have the same challenges. And as the union listened to us as managers, talking about all of our different perspectives on how to realize opportunities and how to vanquish a lot of challenges that we had. They also understood that we didn't speak in one voice. We weren't monolithic, that it was a very active discussion, which began to build the trust within the organization of dealing with issues and not being hung up with personalities.
And how about the adoptions of the kind of goals you talked about? It sounded like they were rather, the bar was being raised on the staff.
Well, that's right. And what we basically said is, and it takes a while for everyone, ourselves included, to learn how to do this. What we said is, don't assume any of the restrictions that we currently operate under. If we could both resolve long-standing problems that we've had, as well as realize a number of opportunities, what do we need to accomplish that? And so when I mentioned earlier about how any agency can do what we've done, it's easier for someone to look at us now. We're self-funded. We have a procurement waiver. 9 of 10 political positions were eliminated with the full support of the president and the Congress. We've created new programs. The 50-state quarters program and the Golden Dollar program are all new programs that we worked with the administration and Congress to create. All of those things are in place now that give us the foundation to work from, but we didn't have any of those back in 93 and 94. And we basically made our business case to the Hill and to our administration to say, this is what we need to accomplish our objectives. So it's really taking the blinders off, thinking outside of the box, and using any creative techniques you can use to say, what could we become? And what do our customers want from us that helps guide that vision as to where we think we should take the Mint?
I think a key to the success, too, is just the partnering with the union and bringing the employees in and not having management go off, you know, off-site, create a plan, and then bring it back. You know, and each year we've gotten better and better at including more of the non-managerial people in the strategic planning process so that it kind of institutionalizes that the culture that management has kind of identified for us.
Well, earlier you talked about minting a huge number of coins, and I understand you have a $500 million capital investment program underway at the Mint and to improve the manufacturing plants. Could you tell us about that?
Be happy to. This, again, one of the key business drivers that we were able to identify to Congress, and in fact, the chairman of our appropriations committees, House and Senate, were fully supportive of this idea. Prior to our public enterprise fund, which is how we generate the revenues to recover our expenses and otherwise turn the profits over to the Treasury General Fund, prior to that, we were under an appropriation and 4 other funding sources. What we identified to those chairmen is that we had a business need to become self-funded, and one of the key reasons for that was our capital budget and the need for it.
Okay, well, let's stop, and we'll come back after the break with more of this answer. Thank you.